The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network. The San Jose Sharks Audio Network presents NHL Entry Draft Coverage, a look at the future of Sharks hockey.
From SAP Center at San Jose, I'm Dan Rusinowski along with Ted Ramey. It is our Draft Lottery Reaction Show. The Draft Lottery has happened. We are at the Penthouse Lounge, one of the elite places at SAP Center for any fan to enjoy a hockey game. And what we're enjoying right now, Ted, is the fact that the New York Islanders, of all teams, won the lottery this year. They jumped from the 10th place overall to number one. And, of course, four-time Stanley Cup champion Ken Morrow had a big smile on his face as the pick was announced. The San Jose Sharks dropped to number two. The other part of that draft, the second drawing, was won by the Utah Mammoth, which is their new name. I want to call them the Utah Hockey Club, but fans in Utah, it is the Utah Mammoth, and they are going to be the fourth overall selection, which is a big deal for that organization. But let's get some reaction from this. My first reaction was the fact that the Sharks are going to draft second is a golden opportunity for this team to get an outstanding hockey player. There is no Macklin Celebrini necessarily in this draft, and we'll talk about this with a variety of people, including Scott Fitzgerald, the director of player personnel of the San Jose Sharks. But overall, what was the reaction and the drama you thought happened here?
I mean, I don't think anyone saw the Islanders coming, jumping nine spots to get up to number one. That was not on my bingo card for draft surprises today. I thought that was really exciting, and just the laughter that we could see just going on there from the complete shock and surprise of going up to that number one spot. But, you know, really, I had looked at this all along, and I didn't mind if the Sharks were going to give the number two pick overall, because that almost takes a little bit of the pressure off of them. I mean, last year it was a no-doubter. It was a Macklin Celebrini. That's where, you know, Mike Greer was going to talk about that. And this year there's, you know, a lot more options. There's a lot more opportunity there. The other thing is the Islanders are in a very different place than where a lot of these other rebuilding teams are. They might be looking at that number one pick very differently, and there's no guarantee that Schaefer goes to them immediately at that number one spot. Now, that's where, if I was a betting man, I'd probably lean to, but that team is in a different place, in my opinion. But even with the Sharks, whether it's going to be any number of those players, and we can talk about them a little bit later, but they're in a good spot, and I think that Mike Greer talked about it on the final media availabilities after the end of the regular season. He said that he was offered a king's ransom for that number one pick overall last year. He obviously turned them all down, but, you know, he said he hadn't really given it much thought, but he was going to listen to what might be pitched his way. So Mike Greer, as he has done at every other point of his, you know, manning the ship of the San Jose Sharks, he's open to his options. He's always talking about his options. He's giving himself options. And I think that was maybe, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed to hear from him. And we're going to hear from that in a second here. But just, you know, he's looking at this and thinking, hey, you know, there's anything that could happen with that number two pick. And I think that's why I'm very excited about it as well. There is, to me, no disappointment in not getting the number one.
No, not at all. And, of course, the Sharks have only had the number one pick overall once, and that was last year in their entire 30-plus year history. They had the opportunity and the fortune to have Macklin Celebrini sitting at number one that year. This year, the players are a lot more closer together, bunched in terms of what they potentially can do. You mentioned the name Schaefer. Matthew Schaefer, a defenseman for the Erie Otters of the Ontario Hockey League, has been regarded as the number one prospect by Central Scouting in the NHL. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it corresponds with the Sharks scouting staff's evaluations, which are going to finish up in the next week to 10 days when they get together, when they have a last look at some of the picks at the prospects combine, the scouting combine that occurs in Buffalo at the very beginning of June. But one thing that's interesting about Matthew Schaefer, he's a very offensive defenseman, a left-handed shot, and has a lot of great abilities, much in the kind of manner of Sam Dickinson, who was drafted by the Sharks last year. But here's the difference. The difference is he only played 17 games this year. And so in a sense, it's a lot like the COVID year when scouts couldn't really get a chance to look at these guys for any extended period. They only only got a brief glimpse of what Matthew Schaefer can do. And I think they've got a pretty good idea of where he's going to go. But that kind of changes the percentage a little bit. And, of course, then you also have the possibility of where these players are coming from. Is it better in North America this year? Is it better in Europe this year? Where do the goalies fit into all of this? And I don't think that the goaltenders are necessarily at the top of the draft for number two overall. But maybe even later in the first round, there might be somebody there. So I think that's going to create a little bit of drama.
I think it will create some drama as well. But I wanted to come at some trivia here, Dan, because you know these things. This is the third time, or there's been three times previously the Sharks have picked number two overall. Do you remember the last number two overall the Sharks picked?
Well, let's see. I remember Patrick Marleau going number two overall.
That's the last one.
And I remember Andre Zuzan going number two overall. And I remember Pat Fulham going number two overall.
Can't forget Pat. So those are some good names, but, you know, Patrick Marleau obviously is the one everybody looks at and the incredible career that he had. And, you know, this right now just presents such an awesome opportunity for this franchise because we've known it since however long we've looked back at all these names. No matter who the Sharks, assuming they do use this pick, you know, Mike Greer, who knows what he's going to do.
I predict he does.
I predict he uses it as well. But the caliber of players that we're looking at the top here, they are so good. They are so talented. The skill level of these young players, Dan, is at a remarkable level. And I also think that, you know, the Sharks are building. They are collecting assets. They are working towards a future that's starting to become more visible. And I think that, you know, last year we got to see what Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini were capable of. I think that was really fun. I mean, we'd been waiting an entire year longer to see what Will Smith can do. And I think that, you know, what Mike Greer and his staff have been able to do is they're identifying the guys they want to go out there and get. And I think that he even alluded to it, and you'll hear from this in a second, about saying that, you know, they're not at the point where they're going to be drafting for need as of yet. They're looking at talent. And I think right now Mike Greer sees a lot of talent in this draft.
And also a lot of maneuverability. The Sharks have two picks in the first round. They obviously have some maneuverability with that second pick that they get from Dallas because of the Mikael Granlund trade. And so that's another option, too. What are they going to do? Are they going to move up? Are they going to move down? Are they going to try to get some veteran players to help the San Jose Sharks, not only in free agency, but perhaps at the trade table? And all those things could happen at the last second. And then you got all the other intangibles, yeah. Right? One thing that Mike Greer has always said is that he believes in getting the best player available. So if you look at the Sharks and you say, well, they need to really build their defense, that means that they have to rate Schaefer number one. That's not necessarily the case because they rate these guys on skating ability, on ability to get the first pass out if you're a defenseman, on their physical play, on the intangibles. You know, the New York Islanders, that there's a young man named James Hagans who's from Hopaug, New York. That's on Long Island. Who knows? Maybe they end up trading the pick and going down because they like him, but yet they feel like they can get something else from somebody to improve their hockey team. You just never know. And the Sharks could theoretically do something like that as well. So I'm excited about it.
And to your point about Hagans being from the area, it certainly worked out well with Celebrini having a history with the Bay Area and the Sharks and getting drafted here in San Jose. So sometimes there are, like you said, those intangibles, those other things that can make an impact on a player and their trajectory within a franchise.
Well, that's right. And, of course, you never know how it's all going to go. A lot of things happen at the draft table, and that's unique, too, because this is a virtual draft now. The top group of our players are going to be in Los Angeles for the television show, but all of the organizations are going to be in their own cities. And I think that the major reason for that is there's so much time that's compressed between the end of the Stanley Cup Final and preparing for the draft and free agency on July the 1st, which is a very important factor for the San Jose Sharks. I think all of these things have caused the NHL to try this method of a virtual type draft, and we'll see how it works out.
There's also many, many moving pieces on draft day, which helps to be at a central base, your location where you've got all your assets, you've got your boards, you've got everything that you want to look at. So I think that's another thing that these teams are really going to like.
But the flip side of that is you can't walk across the draft the floor and talk to another team in private. You have to put them on the phone. So that's going to be an interesting scenario. But all in all, we have a lot of things to be excited about from a San Jose Sharks fan perspective for this game and for this opportunity, for this draft. The draft will, of course, be in June. We have the combine coming up. It's going to happen very, very quickly. But right now, let us go to Mike Greer, who is standing by with a reaction with the media.
Hey, Mike, what's your reaction to getting the number two pick?
I think we're excited. We're going to get a good player. You know, whenever you're picking at the top of the draft, there's going to be some really good players available. So we're excited about the opportunity.
If the kind of consensus goes as people have been saying, we don't know, of course, it can change, but if a defenseman goes to number one, Schaefer, what do you think about the rest of the class if it falls that way?
I mean, there's good players. There's lots of good players. It's probably a little forward heavy, like I think I mentioned to you guys before after Schaefer. But we still have meetings in the combine and more work to do ahead as a staff to kind of see where it all shakes out. But I think there's some really good players that'll be available for us.
What are your initial thoughts on Michael Mesa?
Talented player. Obviously had a record-breaking type year this year, and someone who's had exceptional status, and so talented player.
Right. Thanks, Mike.
Max?
Mike, one thing, it's different the way it was done this year. I don't know how much access you had in years past, but what did you think of the format, letting everybody watch the ping pong balls and being able to follow along? What did you think of the whole way it was produced this year?
It was fine. I think it's kind of more for the fans and I guess we'll see how their reaction is. I think that maybe the fans enjoyed having some drama in it and seeing it happen live and kind of take some of the, I guess, take some of the back room mystery out of it and see it happen live is probably good for the fans.
I know the preparation in terms of the draft and what you guys might do and your rankings internally and whatnot, but obviously it's different this year with it being decentralized. How much might that change maybe a little bit of draft day procedure for you and maybe some the way you react, maybe your first introduction with whoever you guys pick at second overall?
I mean, draft day will be, even though it's remote, it'll be the same process for us going through our meetings and making sure we're prepared. And then day of, I guess it'll be a little bit like the NFL, right? We'll make a phone call after we make our selection, introduce ourselves, and then wait for the player to get here for development camp and probably come here in here the next day. So.
I'm sure you guys have already done your due diligence on a lot of these top players, but does anything change in terms of how you might look at what might be available at two in terms of your scouting process and your rankings list now that you know where you are in the draft order?
No, we'll didn't matter where we were going to pick, really. I think we have our process we'll go through. We'll get our list together, rank everyone, and put them in order, how we see the players, and wherever we pick, and we'll stick with the same process.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Go to Curtis.
Mike, because you have you have your two centermen kind of locked up here for long term and celebrating in Smith. Do you look maybe towards the wing? Is that more of an area maybe you might look towards, considering you've already got Smith and Celebrini?
I don't think we're at the point where we're just going to draft for need. I think we'll just pick the best player on our board when it's our turn to pick, and whoever that player is, whether if he's a center, wing, D-man, that's the player we'll take.
Oh, so you got a ton of looks at Mesa, considering Chernyshov was with Saginaw for half the year there. What stands out about Mesa's game when you guys look at him not only live but maybe on tape?
He plays a good 200-foot game. He's got a heavy stick. Sees the ice well, can make plays. I think he played in all situations. So, and he's kind of has a knack for scoring goals. So, really solid year this year. I think we've seen him a bunch going back to last year scouting Prec. So, good player. And like I said, that when you're at the top of the draft, there's lots of good players available. He's one of them.
When when we spoke to you in April there, you said if the right deal came along, you'd be open to trading it. Is that still kind of your mindset, maybe keeping an open mind about what might happen between now and the draft?
Yeah, well, I definitely have an open mind to it. I always have to be open to anything that we think can make us a better hockey team and a better organization. And so, if there's a package out there that someone presents us with, we'll have to think it through and see if it makes sense for us to do. So, I'm always trying to be open-minded to things like that.
I think it's fair to say that, Schaefer would have been a really good fit in San Jose, considering the forwards you've drafted in recent years. And not saying anything about Dickinson, obviously he's a terrific player, but do you maybe look at checking in on the Islanders and see what maybe they have in mind if they're open to moving that pick at all?
I haven't really given that much thought, to be honest with you. And I don't know what the Islanders are thinking at that, what they're going to do with the pick themselves. So, we'll take some time to let this kind of marinate a little bit and go through our options, and we'll kind of see where that goes.
Can I just ask you too one more thing? I mean, is there any update on William Eklund and how he's doing right now? Obviously, it kind of looks like maybe averted a real serious injury, but any update on how he's doing?
Yeah, I talked to Ecky yesterday. I think he's doing okay. Obviously got a little bit of a scare, and I think he lucked out and we lucked out that it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Had a little bit of an exploratory surgery today, and came out of it well, and now he's just got to heal up and start the rehab process.
Do you anticipate him playing in the worlds at all, or any issue
No.
with him being? Yeah,
No, he'll be out of the worlds.
he won't play, I guess. Or sorry.
He's out. Yeah, he's not going to play in this
Oh,
tournament.
got it. Okay. And no issue with him being ready for camp or his off-season training regimen.
He should be, but I guess you never know. But hopefully, he should be.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
We'll go to Alan.
Mike, obviously, with what Celebrini was able to do this year, does it feel like there's not as much of a dire when you didn't get the first overall pick this time around?
I mean, we definitely, lucked out last year to be able to select Mac, and this year would have obviously been nice to have the pick and have the choice of all the players, but picking two is we're still in a pretty good spot, so we're happy.
Yeah, and then obviously you don't know per se where the second pick in the first round is going to be. How do you kind of attack that portion, not knowing for sure right now what it's going to be, but you know it's probably going to be in the final five or so.
Yeah, I mean it's another chance for us to get an asset to add to our group and make us a better team. So, every position down there, whether that's a forward D, even a goalie, we'll look at everything and just see where our list falls out, and we'll take whoever's at the top of our list at when we get to that pick.
Thanks, Mike.
Marco?
Hey, Mike. In case you were entertaining the thought of, packaging the two first rounders and maybe even a second rounder, would you want one, say, superstar for something like that, or just maybe two quality players that you could get for those draft picks? What would you guys say in that instance?
That's kind of tough to say. I don't know. It's kind of tough to say at that scenario, but I think we'd be, if we were gonna do something like that, I think we'd be looking for someone who kind of really good young players who could kind of fit and grow with our group.
Shane?
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to ask also about the Dallas pick, and what are your thoughts on that right now in terms of, does it seem like that's something that you'll keep, or does it look like something that just don't know right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think every we'll see how long their run goes on. They obviously had a big win the other night, and I think most teams still have meetings, their amateur scouting meetings to go, and are kind of getting their everything in order for their off-season plans. So, we'll just kind of see what happens here over the next month or so, and see what happens.
How would you characterize the first round a little bit in terms of, like, is it kind of like a top five heavy? And then after, like, is there a certain number where it starts to be a little bit more of a crapshoot, maybe like 15 or 10 or 20?
You know what? I can't really give you an answer for that yet, just because we haven't, we have meetings coming up in about a week or so where we'll go through our final list and rank everyone and get them in order. And until we do that, I probably don't really have a real solid idea of where maybe the drop off may be. So I don't want to misspeak and tell you something that's not true until we get all the information.
Okay. And I want to ask you also about Macklin Celebrini. He was a Calder finalist today. Just how great is that? Just what's that say about the season that he had?
Yeah, really happy for him. He had a great year. I think he exceeded my expectations for him, and probably probably even some of his teammates. I thought he carried the load for us, which is tough for an 18-year-old. I think he drove the group forward and had to play tough matchups every night, especially after Granny got traded. So that wasn't easy for him. But I think he handled everything well, the scrutiny, the media attention and everything. I'm really proud of him, the way he handled everything and how hard he competed every night. So I think it was a really great year, and I'm happy he's was able to get nominated for the award.
And speaking of that load that he carried, we talked about a little bit about this at your end of season availability about the captaincy. Is he somebody that you would consider for that captaincy next year, or is it maybe a little early for him being just 19?
I haven't really given too much thought to the captaincy. Like I said, it's something I want to, once we kind of, things settle down, now we got through today, I think I'll start to think about it a little bit more. We have a good leadership group here, and I think that's something he can grow into, as being part of that leadership group. But he's got a lot on his plate already as a 18-year-old kid, and playing and handling the things he has to do. So I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no, but I don't know if it's the time to add something else like that to his plate.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Take a couple more here, JD.
Hey, Mike, following up on Eklund, right, who's going to be eligible for a contract extension starting July 1st. You look around the league, you see guys like Matty Beniers, Matt Coronado from the same age group. Are you going to be looking to potentially lock him up long term, let things play out, maybe look at a bridge deal or kind of explore your options with him?
Yeah, I think I think everything's probably on the table. I've met very briefly with his agent in Dallas last week, just to kind of get their sense of it. And so it was a good conversation. It was brief, but it was nice. I don't think we really know which route or which way we're going to go, but it's definitely something that's on our radar.
Especially because, I mean, you look at, right, the Sharks, you guys have a lot of young players here and there has been a lot of change. Eklund kind of feels like that first piece, a part of this rebuild before, Celebrini and Smith. So how important is it to you to kind of, as you start to kind of set this foundation, having a guy like Eklund around long term?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important for us to keep our, our top players around and make sure we start to build the foundation, like you said. I think we've peeled back so much and made we've moved out a lot of guys that I think hopefully now we're starting to transition to the phase where we lock guys up and build that foundation and have guys that are going to be here and be a part of it for a long time.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
We'll finish up with Alan.
Hey, Mike, do you feel like maybe the top five players in this draft, whoever it may be, they have an opportunity to come into camp and compete for a spot this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. I think it's up to the player. It's up to the player, and see how they do at camp. But to play in the 18 in the NHL as an 18-year-old kid is extremely difficult. Macklin, like I've been saying all along, is kind of the exception to this. So we'll have an open mind to it and see how camp goes and everything like that. But it's not an easy thing to play in the league at that age. So we'll just have to see how camp goes, and we'll take it from there.
Well, as always, Mike Greer is close to the vest when it comes to the cards that he's going to put on the table, but he's also pretty forthcoming with what he does tell you. And I think that the most important things that he said was that, number one, he will consider all options for the draft pick and for the entire draft, whatever selections the Sharks have. The second thing that comes to mind for me is the Sharks are committed to selecting the best player available at every position that they draft at, which puts some very, very important stock in the final analysis that they
Right.
put together, and that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. Those are my initial observations.
Yeah, I think the options thing, and like we referenced earlier, Mike talked about the Ricky Williams draft idea of offering everything for a player a year ago. And while I don't expect that to be what happens, I think it's funny that Mike was even willing to bring that up, because maybe he is planting a seed out there for somebody to listen to that statement and say, okay, Mike's willing to listen. Because if I was in his position, I would want to listen. You don't have to do anything by listening. You just have to listen to see what another team or another general manager is willing to move. So I think it's interesting to watch him bring that up, to what you also said about him talking about going for the best player available. I think that's always the way to do it, because whether or not that is your specific need, one way or another, you're most likely to end up with a darn good player. And I think that if we look at this draft, there are a number of good players. I also enjoyed that he just talked about, you know, needing to still work things out. He was being much more nebulous than a year ago when he was willing to say it's going to be Macklin, as opposed to this year. He had very, very kind things to say about a lot of the players. He referenced when asked about Michael Mesa, for instance, who a lot of people are looking at right now with San Jose, A, because that's the guy who moved up big in the draft boards as the season went on, and also the association with Chernyshov, which is a, you know, something that's fun to think about, but we don't know how that relationship translates from a lower level at the OHL into the NHL. It's fun to think about, but there is no guarantee that that chemistry continues.
Well, it reminds me of the story of the very first draft in San Jose Sharks history, way, way back in June of 1991. The Sharks did not get the advantage of being an expansion team in the Vegas Golden Knights mode for the draft. In fact, they did not get the first pick overall because it happened to be the year that Eric Lindros was going to be the consensus number one. And the league wanted the Sharks to come in a year later, but George Gund wanted to come in the 91-92 season. And so they got the second pick overall and the first pick in each and every other round. Now, remember, there were only 22 teams in the NHL, including the Sharks, in that particular draft. And they had three picks in the top 30. So here was their thinking. The thinking when they were looking at that second pick overall after Lindros went to the Quebec Nordiques at the time was to say, all right, who are the players that we're looking at? And they looked at a forward and they looked at a defenseman. And they said, if we take the defenseman, we know that we're going to get an outstanding prospect who's going to have an excellent National Hockey League career. However, that word chemistry came up. The league wasn't doing the Sharks any favors at the time in terms of getting good players to start their career, or I should say top players, because they did get some good ones. But what ended up happening was they said, if we take the forward instead of the defenseman at number two, one of his line mates might be available at number 23, and we think he's got a good chance of a career. And then there's this other defenseman that's going to be in the high 20s or might actually be available at number 30. So instead of getting one player that we know we're going to get for sure that's going to be a good player, we'll get two forwards who can have chemistry and start to build that with the team, and maybe we'll get that offensive defenseman as well. We'll figure out a way to make sure that that happens. And with that, they drafted Pat Falloon second. They drafted Ray Whitney with a 20-year NHL career and a Stanley Cup championship career, 23rd. And then they drafted Sandis Ozilinch 30th. And so that looks pretty good, and it makes sense. The only problem is that the New Jersey Devils had the next pick after the Sharks, third overall in that draft, and they took the defenseman the Sharks were looking at, and that, of course, was Scott Niedermeyer, one of the greatest defensemen ever to play. You don't know what they're going to be like when you draft them at 18. You have hopes as to which way they can go. And as it turned out, Ozilinch had a first-team NHL All-Star career. He won a Stanley Cup championship in Colorado, ended up coming back to the Sharks near the end. But you know, it really was a great story to tell as to how people develop and how things happen. And, of course, you compare that to Marc-Edouard Vlasic in the second round, or Joe Pavelski, 205th overall, and Yevgeny Nabokov, 219th overall. The same thing's going to happen in this draft. It's going to happen again. There are going to be players that are drafted late that nobody talks about going in with all the hype, and they're going to turn out to be some of the best players in that draft. And the Sharks, fortunately, have a lot of selections.
They do. And also, Dan, I will say we're getting a look at a lot of those players right now with the Barracuda in the playoffs. We've been able to see Quentin Musty get out there. We've obviously watched Luca Cagnoni, Bisted make his impact, Colin Graf once again, even though he wasn't drafted. He was signed as a free agent after being undrafted. We've been watching Yaroslav Askarov here. My favorite part about these playoffs that have maybe gone a little bit undersold is that the Barracuda, for the first time in the postseason since the 2021 season, first time with John McCarthy at the helm, they've played four postseason games. They've won three of them. They've been tight, contentious, rough, nitty-gritty playoff hockey games, and they've been able to answer the questions that they've had presented to them. And I think it's been really fun to watch them walk away with that series win against Ontario, and then in a really tough game last night where you and I were hanging out watching the entire time, fun game, they were able to come through with that overtime power play goal with Daniil Gushin being in the right place at the right time after Colin Graf was also there right in front. And watching these guys develop up in these big games. This is exactly what the franchise wanted going back a decade when they brought the Barracuda from Worcester, when they were then the Worcester Sharks, here to the Bay Area. You get a greater view at these guys. You've got TechCU Arena rocking the first time we've seen two playoff games in this building, and you're watching these prospects develop right in front of us.
Well, that's right, and there's nothing like a best of five and best of seven series against men that's going to help you evaluate where you are as an organization, but also to help your young players develop. And you were referencing some of the physical play, you know, Sabourin going in and nailing guys, and Regenda getting involved and getting net front. These are players that aren't the so-called top prospects for the Sharks, but they're important building blocks. And let's not forget, too, that the organization invested in the Barracuda this season by bringing in the MVP of the league and the leading scorer in Andrew Podorolski, and bringing in the captain, Jimmy Schultz, to this team. They paid more money to get those guys here to provide leadership at that AHL level because they put so much emphasis on learning not only how to develop as a player, but learning how to win. And I think that that bodes really well for the future of the San Jose Sharks. And it's exciting right now. Everybody needs to get to TechCU Arena. Hopefully there is round number three after they go back to Colorado with a 1-1 score after two games. They got to win two out of three. If they can do that, the organization will take a major, major step forward.
No, I agree very much so, Dan. And obviously it's very tough sledding from here on out. They go to Colorado for three Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and then if they extend it to game number five, they have to wait a couple of games till the Sunday game, which is a weird bit of scheduling, but that's how it goes in the playoffs. But let's talk a little bit more about what the Sharks are going to be looking at in this upcoming draft, as we're now going to be joined by the Director of Player Personnel for the San Jose Sharks, Scott Fitzgerald.
The man who directs all of player personnel for the San Jose Sharks organization is Scott Fitzgerald, one of the best in his position in any team in hockey, and we are very pleased to have him on our Draft Lottery Reaction Show. Fitzy, first of all, what's the reaction of scouts to this whole draft lottery process, and how emotional do you get when you watch the balls dropped out?
This year, obviously, was a little different, guys, with it being live, them holding the cards last year. With the Macklin stuff, it seemed a little bit more dramatic this year. And then when they added in the numbers for that last pick, you kind of had an idea. You obviously have an idea when the number comes up, a new wrinkle. So, I mean, it's exciting, but at the end of the day, it's where you're going to end up is where you end up. You can't control it. So you try not to worry about it. And the work's getting done all year. So wherever we pick Chris Morehouse and his group, we'll be ready to roll.
Does this, now knowing that you have the number two overall pick, does this allow you to kind of trim the fat and focus on this pick, or is it still an area now where there's so many moving pieces where you're still not at that part yet and really the fat doesn't get trimmed until that number one pick is in?
No, right now, Ted, we start up our final meetings next week. We still got a lot more work to do with that and the combine and all that stuff. Now that we know we're going to be picking that in the two hole, we'll probably do a deep dive on a half a dozen guys. Again, like I said, Chris Morehouse and his staff have done an outstanding job in the 2 years previous, but also with the due diligence. So our guys in their areas know these guys well. It's just a matter of getting all the pieces of the puzzle on the table and connecting it at final meetings, combines, and then leading up to the draft. We'll do two or three days in San Jose because it's a remote draft this year, unlike the previous years. So, again, at the end of the day, the work will get done, but we've probably got a half a dozen guys that we'll really drill down on. And like I said, at the end of the day, Chris and his group will be 100% ready, and we expect good results like we have the last few years.
Part of that process, obviously, in your due diligence has got to be to analyze where your last couple of drafts have gone, how those players have developed, and how do you feel about that process so far?
Well, I think we've done a good job addressing some needs. Right. You know, some of the bigger prospects, Macklin and Will, are already there. So it's, it's a little bit easier with those guys seeing the future. But, Quentin Musty's is a heck of a player, as well, along with Chernyshov. And there's a bunch of guys that have done well, but we don't have enough time to mention all of them. But we're happy with what the mandate that Mike has passed down. We want competitive skill, skating, and size and all that stuff, all in the one package. So
does that idea of what you're looking for, how much do you put that against what the player is at this point and the talent they're showing? Because I know there's always the wants that you want a player to develop, especially the mentality and maybe having a little bit more of that, you know, chip on their shoulder. But you also look at what the player is right now. I mean, do you try to find a happy medium, or do you hope that you can maybe get a guy who's got a lot of what you want and then develop the other aspects, maybe those mental, the mental side of things?
I think that's the hardest part is the projection, Ted. You know, especially with the amateur draft guys, it's not like the NFL where most guys are playing in one spot. The kids are coming from all over the world, all different levels in Europe, all different levels in the United States, whether it's college, CHL, USHL, North American League, or even Minnesota High School, New England Prep. It's just so many levels to balance what's what. I think that's probably the hardest part in the projection piece. You know, again, this isn't the SEC football, right? Where you're seeing it's very close to Sundays. The guys who are doing it on Saturdays more than likely to do it on Sundays. And that's not we're not so lucky enough for that to be the case. So the projection piece is, I think a lot of guys will rely on their past experiences, whether it was working for the San Jose Sharks or other teams. And, you know, at the end of the day, a couple of things. There are guys that have no chance to play, will play. And there's guys that can't miss that miss. It's just, there's no formula. You know, there really isn't a formula. You do the due diligence and you hope with the hard work and your process, you pick the right players.
For the years that you've been with the Sharks, one of the things that you focused on is the first two rounds of the NHL draft, and obviously that gets the most attention. Chris Morehouse, of course, works very closely with you on that. How do you think that that's worked out in terms of being able to get the absolute best player for the Sharks in those first two rounds?
Yeah, again, it goes back to Mike and the mandate. You know, Chris has done a great job. I feel lucky to help in any way I can with him and his staff. You know, at the end of the day, it's just consistency and what works. You just got to keep the repetitiveness and going back to it. It takes time. Again, guys have been in other organizations. So it's just at the end of the day, I think we're going to do a good job here. I think we're going to pick the right players. And, you know, we have a few staples already with Mac and Will and some other guys coming, Sam Dickinson. I forgot to mention him with Musty and Chernyshov and some of the other guys, you know. So I think what Chris and the guys are doing, and again, like I said, I'm happy to help in any way I can with those guys with that stuff. I think it's just going to continue to trend the right way. I think good things are coming. And when it comes, I think it's a staying, a long-term kind of a thing.
How excited are you now that you know where the team is picking and, you know, now get to look at what might be there with that number two pick? And obviously, Mike, when he spoke with us just a few moments ago, had a lot of praise for all the guys who are in the potential of being in those top five picks for this year's draft.
Yeah, you know what? I know the people are saying that the Schaefer kid is kind of a guy that's out in front of everyone, but I don't necessarily believe that. Like I said, there's probably a half a dozen guys that every team's going to really kind of drill down on. And, you know, there's just good players everywhere. You know, I mean, out of the six, seven guys, I mean, 7 years from now, we look back, right? The number one guy might not be the best guy. The number seven might be the number 37. It's, like I said, it's just the process that you got to believe in. And you know, you pick the fruit that you want at the end of the day. And at one, we don't have that luxury. We'll just sit back and do our part. And whenever it's our time to go at two, Chris and the guys will be ready, and there'll be no hesitation.
How much are you paying attention to what's going on with the San Jose Barracuda these days? We see a lot of Todd Marchand around the playoff scene here in TechCU Arena. A lot of excitement around the development of those kids at this level. What are your observations?
Yeah, Todd's vital to the organization. He has a lot of experience with development, and only a few people in the history are ready made, and the development piece is so important. There's so many components to it: the player's conditioning, mindset, other things that go on in their daily life that could get them off track. And Todd and his staff, with Luca and Tommy Wingles, have done a good job keeping a pulse on the group we have. And it's exciting. And to the Cooter, it's, you know, this year's been an exciting year. Get off to a really good start early. a little bit here, a little dip, some recalls, some injuries. It happens to everybody. But you know what? It was a big win last night in overtime and off to Colorado. Let's see if we can, like we did in L.A., let's go and get two wins on the road here.
It's going to be exciting. One thing we want to talk about is you've got the draft combine coming up, and then, of course, your meetings that you talked about, discussing perhaps 30 guys that you're looking at in that final list. What are the final criteria that comes down to it after seeing these guys so many times? What the changes in those final days to make that final list in order that you like?
I don't think a lot changes, Dan. I think the guys, they do such a good job with the information, the viewings, video, interviews. I mean, there's no rock left unturned. So I think at the end of the day, it's just sharpening up final meetings here. But then we also have the NHL Combine where you get some time with the kids. Not a lot, but you get a little bit of a feel with the players here. And then, you know, again, we meet prior to the draft in San Jose. And we just put the kind of finishing touches on it. But, you know, it's just a process. It's hard to explain. It's a September to June type of a thing. And we don't put more weight into June or May than we did October, November. It's a long play. And that's kind of how we do it here. I don't know how other teams do it.
I'm going to jump in with one final one for you, Scott, because I think it's a question of relativity. The bar has been set very high by what we saw from Macklin and Will this year. Is that almost unfair to the next wave of prospects that will come through with this team, whether we're talking about this year's draft or other guys who are still in the pipeline?
No, I don't think so, Ted. I think the guys, we want a competitive culture when the day's over, and we want our alphas driving, and we want everyone else chasing, and, you know, that should get the best out of everybody when you have that competitiveness internally for whether it's roster spots or ice time. That's usually, it's paramount in any success in any sport or any work in life, you know? So I think having those couple of the two alphas out front, it's going to help everybody else. And hopefully we can have 8 to 10 alphas at some point.
Well, you guys are doing a fantastic job, Fitzy, and we really appreciate the time you spent with us today. Everybody's really excited about the opportunities this draft is going to bring us. So thanks a lot.
All right, guys. Thanks for your time. It was awesome.
I get really excited when I talk to Scott Fitzgerald because Fitzy has a blue-collar way about him. He just puts his nose to the grindstone and throws it all out there, makes sure he tells you exactly what he's thinking. And the other thing is that he has a really good nose for talent. He's been around a long time. He and Chris Morehouse and Mike Ricci and Todd Marchant and all of these guys that are part of the Sharks organization have done an outstanding job. And it's one of the reasons why I think the Sharks have suddenly gone to the top of the list, really, when it comes to top prospects in the league.
And I asked him about, you know, the bar being set so high by Macklin and Will, and I said if that was almost an unfair act to follow for these, you know, oncoming prospects, and he said nope.
Yeah,
he
I love
said,
that.
You want those guys to be the alpha dogs, and you want everybody else chasing them to realize that is the standard. I mean, that's a no BS, very pragmatic and very blunt answer of, no, we do have a very high standard here, and that the fact that those guys did come in and perform at such a high level, that's where the expectations are.
Well, let's talk about some of these people that are going to be in the top group of the National Hockey League entry draft. Of course, number one on the list is Matthew Schaefer, defenseman from the Erie Otters of the OHL. Only played in 17 games, as we referenced earlier. I think that makes it a little bit harder to decide exactly which direction he's going to go, but they've seen all of the signs of him being an outstanding offensive defenseman. The likelihood is he could go to the Islanders first, especially given the fact that Noah Dobson, their top offensive defenseman, might or might not still be there after this year, and they're going through a period of reevaluation. That's going to be fascinating. But I think he's a player that, if he's available, the Sharks obviously have a need at defense, which could kind of tie in.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that's the thing that everyone has identified most obvious about the Sharks and their prospects and what they are quote unquote lacking in. And obviously that's only when we look at it from the 30,000 foot view. You don't know what these guys are all going to turn into, but Schaefer has been a very, very high quality player. Like you alluded to, Dan, he didn't play very much this year because he had the collarbone injury, 17 games, but what everyone has seen from him has just made scouts, has made pundits, has made people just really get excited. Doesn't have the same bomb of a shot as Dickinson, but one of the things that people keep on referencing with him is his vision and patience.
Right, and his hockey sense.
Yeah.
That's something you really desperately need when you're making that first pass out of the zone. It's one of the strengths of Luca Cagnoni, too.
It is.
Patience and also escapability. Although Schaefer is 6'1", so he's an average-size NHL player, somebody that's about 183 pounds, and at his age, he's just going to fill out a little bit more, so that's pretty exciting. Michael Misa plays for Saginaw of the OHL, and obviously they've had some great success over the last couple of years. One of the things that pops up into his mind is that same discussion we were having earlier about chemistry from that first Sharks draft. You had Ray Whitney and Pat Falloon playing together in Spokane of the Western Hockey League. Well, right now, Igor Chernyshov, who's a property of the Sharks and actually is going to really have a very strong pro career, we think, has played with Misa. And so the question is, how much do they play together? Do they have chemistry? Does that figure into any of the decision-making processes? Because Chernyshov, I think everybody is projecting, is somebody that might actually jump right into the NHL next year.
If you watched his games from last year, if you watched the highlights, you saw an NHL-ready guy. And I think that a lot of people are putting some of those expectations on Michael Misa as well. And I've heard the term cheat code applied to him and his game, and just has so much about him that's complete at a level that's really maybe unexpected. And I think that, you know, people talk about the size, he's, you know, just over 6 foot, and maybe that you'd look at a Martone who might fit the mold of what Greer's looking for a little bit better. But I think that's something that actually gets played out a little bit, where people talk about, oh, the ideal player. It's like, well, yeah, if every general manager, if you ask them, they say, yeah, I'd want a 6'3 guy who's mean, nasty, fast, and strong.
Everybody wants that.
And I don't think that there's ever been a time where I've looked at a lot of players who wanted it to where their size hurts them that much. Dan Boyle, did it matter that he was not the tallest guy in the world?
Lane Hudson.
Joe Pavelski.
Luca Cagnoni. Joe Pavelski.
You go down the list. These guys, if they want it, the size is not the determining factor. It's the size of their heart. It's the drive to win. That goes beyond any measurable, literally, when you're putting them next to a ruler.
One thing that's very, very evident about this draft is that there's no consensus number one. So we've just mentioned two people, Matthew Schaefer and Michael Misa. They're at the top of Central Scouting's list, and they're certainly in the list of that 30-plus group of guys that Scott Fitzgerald was talking about. But James Hagans is one of those typical players that you could go all the way across the board and talk about whether he'd be an ideal fit or not. He played at Boston College. Well, the Sharks have drafted a lot of kids from either BC or BU these last couple of years. Then there's the argument about James Hagans being only 5'11".
Right.
But yet, there are other factors about his game. I think that he's one of the players that there will be a lot of controversy about arguments about. People at the draft table amongst the scouts disagreeing about what his career is going to be like. I don't think anybody disagrees about the fact he's going to have a solid NHL career, but about where he fits in terms of evaluation.
You don't get compared to Jack Hughes by accident. I'll say that much. And yes, he's not the biggest guy out there. If you go back about September, he was the guy that people started projecting as the number one overall pick. So, you know, obviously early projections change, and they did over the course of the year. Obviously, Schaefer jumped up the list, then the injury knocked him back a little bit, and then Michael Misa with the season he was having, you know, really got on people's radar a little bit more. And then, especially when Craig Button said he could make an argument to have him number one overall, that got a lot of people's attentions as well. But, you know, Hagans, you know, at a program like Boston College, if he stands out, that means something very, very important in today's world, as we just saw right here in San Jose.
Only a freshman, and, you know, you could kind of compare it in some sense to Philip Bisted with the San Jose Barracuda. He's only 20 years old, and yet he's the number two center in the American Hockey League. That's a big responsibility. And Hagan's going to a program where Will Smith just left. That puts a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and he had a really fine season for Boston College, a point-a-game performance over the course of a year. I think he had his ups and his downs, as every young player does, but he had to accept a bigger responsibility too, and so that's going to be really interesting. A couple of other guys to talk about in the top five of Central Scouting for North American players. Jake O'Brien was ranked fourth. He's a center from Brantford of the OHL. He is from Ontario, and he's got a lot of different tools in that toolbox. I think hockey sense and the ability to make plays is something that everybody talks about with him. And then the number five guy is a defenseman who's a Hulk, Radim Mertens. Broncos playing for the Seattle Thunderbirds of the Western Hockey League, that same program that produced Patrick Marleau a couple of decades ago. This guy is 6'6", and here's something else. He's a right-handed shooting defenseman, which is always valued by scouts. So I'm interested to see exactly where he fits in terms of that top six group and where he might fall, whether he's going to be higher or whether he's going to be lower. You may remember last year, Beckett Seneca, who was drafted by Anaheim, much higher than everybody thought, is turning out to be a pretty good prospect for the Anaheim Ducks. And so these are things that happen as the years go on, with the players getting a little older, more seasoning, and that's what I'm looking at for this kid.
I also want to bring up a name before we finish up here, Victor Eklund, the brother of William Eklund, who it sounds like he's going to be out for a couple of months in the offseason.
You mean William?
William Eklund, yes, his brother. But now Victor Eklund is another guy who, again, comes in as a very top-ranked or one of the top-ranked European skaters. Great skill set. Obviously, we know that that's a family that knows how to develop talent and also has a lot of high-quality character about them as well, which I think is something that Mike Greer and his staff consistently look for. They talk about the character of the guys. They want good humans here in San Jose.
Well, Victor Eklund has been described by his brother, William, as a Travis Konecny type. And if he's anything close to that, he's going to get a lot of interest. He probably won't fall to that second Sharks first-round pick that they have from Dallas, which should be in the mid to high 20s, or maybe even a little bit lower than that. But he's somebody certainly to look at. And his teammate, too, Anton Frondell, has gone up in the rankings to the number one-ranked European skater. So those are two players, I think, that you probably have to pay attention to. And also, there's another guy, Alexander Zharkovsky, who's playing for Ufa, the junior team in Russia, in Central Russia. Mm-hmm. I think he's an interesting character. He is a 6'1" right-wing player who can score goals and can make plays. So that's somebody, perhaps, that we can look out for. And we haven't even talked about goalies yet, but I think that somewhere in the draft, the Sharks are going to be selecting yet another netminder, because you can never get enough of them, number one. Number two, you don't exactly know how they're all going to develop. Last year, they drafted Christian Kirsch, and they drafted another man out of Russia near the end of the draft, Korosteliov. But now they've got to have to perhaps draft another guy so that they're in the pipeline and on their way up. So it's going to be fascinating to see which goaltenders go up. And I haven't even had a look as to which goaltenders are at the top of the list, but there are always a couple that come up. One of them is playing in junior this season, and there are two guys that are not 6 feet tall. And that's the issue, right? They're all 6'5 these days.
Yeah, I know.
Whatever happens, goaltenders will definitely be part of the National Hockey League draft as well. It's just a question of where they slot in. Want to thank everybody for joining us on our program today. It's an exciting day for the San Jose Sharks organization. The National Hockey League entry draft is on June 27th and 28th. We'll have the scouting combine in Buffalo. After that, the draft. After that, of course, free agency and development camp, and lots of exciting things to really look forward to. On behalf of everybody with the Sharks organization, we thank you for joining us today. For Ted Ramey, I'm Dan Rusinowski.
You've been listening to coverage of the NHL Entry Draft, a look at the future of Sharks hockey. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.